Welcome to the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's February 7th. The board met in closed session. We discussed a student discipline. We had a student discipline hearing. We discussed student personnel consideration of California High School Exit Exam CASI waiver, requests for students with disabilities. We discussed anticipated litigation, significant exposure to potential litigation, one case, and we reviewed and discussed negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, seeing that, let's move on then. I don't think we've already taken our action.
Sorry, you need to take that action in open session.
Okay. Mrs. Holmes, we did open the session up,
okay.
And we did take a vote, and the vote was 7-0. Let's move on then to approval of the minutes. Do we have somebody that would like to approve the minutes, that would like to go for that? Thank you. Somebody like to have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Anybody from the public that would like to comment on that? No? Okay. I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move. The board did not receive any correspondence at the time the agenda was prepared, so we'll move right into public comment. And we do have one request to speak. Jennifer.
Jennifer Ryan.
So I want to open a conversation. So that's, do I have to?
You got to. You know what? I think your mic's off there. There we go.
So what I want to do is start or open a conversation with you all, and so I have a little prepared talk, but you all received an email from me last week. So the nature of the WISE partnerships vary throughout the county. In Paso, the relationship is truly a partnership, where each party ensures the needs of the others are being met, communication is consistent, and access is nearly limitless. In Cambria, the relationship is innovative. Staff, Y, or school district don't worry about whose job it is. They concern themselves with the bigger picture of eliminating the achievement gap, securing the resources to provide for those youth, and viewing the partnership as limitless. We're not charged rent in either of these cases. The value of these programs and our partnership, as highlighted in my email to each of you last week, exceeded any potential rent revenue. My request is that we develop a more integrated partnership. In that arrangement, I believe that the rent issue will resolve itself. If exploring a more meaningful partnership isn't in the cards, I'm requesting that the board come to understand the value of the WISE efforts in the lives of the San Luis Coastal students and reconsider the current rate structure. A fee increase to accommodate the higher rents will result in an enrollment decline and likelihood the closing of at least one site. Our experience tells us that even though the Y offers financial assistance, parents will send their children home alone. When Grover Beach transitioned from a fee-based site to no charge, enrollment went from 80A of 22.
Backlights, so everyone's white shirts were glowing, and then we had glow sticks and everything. So that was really cool. Everyone really liked that. It's something different and new. And we also had our dance team perform, and we had some guest performances also. We also had our winter formal dance, which honestly wasn't that big of a hit, but so we won't be able to have spring fling, but that could also be good because people will be more excited for prom now. So the ASB class is also working at the Manson Marsh every day, which is a home for elderly people, and that's been really fun. We just kind of play games with the residents, and it's a great way to get community service hours and involved in the community. We also had Career Day for the juniors, which I thought was really interesting. And I'm pretty sure some of you came to that, which is really cool. And then last week we had Multicultural Week, where everyone signed a contract saying they would not discriminate at school or at all. And we had lunchtime activities all that week. And then on Friday we had an assembly where we had performers doing like their different cultures. Like we had flamenco dancers, and we had the team from Cal Poly doing their Chinese lion dancing stuff. And we had silk performers. And there were others, but it was really cool, and everyone really liked it. And then coming up, we are selling gummy Valentine grams, which will raise money for prom. And those are kind of like candy grams, except technically we're not allowed to sell candy. So we're selling Curious George gummies. And then also going on is freshman orientation. So ASB is helping out with that. And then later this month, we will guide the freshmen around campus, or incoming freshmen, I should say. And the senior class is selling tickets for a pancake breakfast at Applebee's to raise money for their senior magazine. And we will also be having a blood drive on February 24th. So teachers and staff and students are all encouraged to participate. That's
it. Great. And Tessa, can I ask you a question about the pancake breakfast?
Yeah.
How do people buy tickets for that?
You would have to ask one of the senior girls.
Okay.
But I could possibly get them mailed to you guys if you're interested in purchasing some.
Well, what I was thinking is maybe if you guys talk to Mr. O'Connor or somebody at the school, they can email us and get us information on how to do that.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Great. Thank you. So, Haley.
Hi. So, I'm finishing up my senior year at Morro Bay, having a lot of fun. Senior night was actually tonight for soccer, and I didn't cry, but, I mean, I teared up, and I might cry when I get home, so. But past events on campus, we had our winter formal not this weekend, but a week ago. The theme was red carpet formal. And everyone had a really, really good time. Usually at Morro Bay, winter formal is the lowest attended dance, and there were actually a lot of people there, and it was really fun. The ASB class also performed our mini mock rock assembly this past Thursday, and it was very, very fun, and very sad that it was my last one. We had a lot of the male teachers dressed up as werewolves from Twilight, so they were like wearing mid-thigh jean shorts and like dancing to Raining Men, so it was enjoyable, it was funny. Upcoming events, we're having our blood drive on Valentine's Day, kind of just happened to fall on that day, but ironically. So teachers, students, anyone can donate blood, and I'm going to for the first time, so I'm excited. Our dodgeball tournament is coming up. We haven't set the dates yet, but everyone always loves it. Coach Greer, it's one of his favorite things. And we're having our big mock rock hosted by FNL on March 2nd, and I believe tickets are $10, and it'd be awesome if all of you came. And we're also having 8th grade visitation on March 1st, so the incoming freshmen will come for a tour of the school and ask questions and see what high school's like. And we're starting registration for the next school year during this month online, so everyone will get their classes earlier this year. Other news, our boys basketball team is tied for first in the Los Padres League. Our girls basketball team is currently undefeated in league. We have many wrestlers headed to individual CIF and team CIF. Girls soccer, we're still hanging in there. We might have a bid to CIF. Got to see how the season finishes out. And on this past Friday, our boys basketball team raised $700 for cancer prevention at their home game. And next week...
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm really excited for you. I'm sure we'll hear more. You'll let us know next time.
Thank you.
If I could, I'd...
Yes, Chris, please.
I just want to compliment Morro Bay on the Baseball Boosters Crab Feast. It was fantastic. I'm a little worried, though, because Mr. Buckman was there, and I'm not sure the economics are going to work out. He was putting away a lot of crab, but it was great.
I did not personally attend the crab feed, but I always hear that it's very, very, very delicious.
Okay, well, thank you very much. As always, you're welcome to stay, or we appreciate your coming, and back to the grindstone of homework. Mr. Buckman, did you want to talk? Did you want to give us an update on Santa Lucia this time, or did you want to wait till next time? Okay, thanks.
I just want to thank everybody for giving me this opportunity to let you know what happened. The January ROP meeting was held at San Luis High School, and we did visit the welding and the CAD program. We have a tremendous new welding situation up there, just lots of new equipment, amazing stuff. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, you should go see it. There was probably the longest discussion that we've ever had on a single topic at the ROP meeting, mostly around the frustration with the state budget and the stress that it's placing on the ROP joint powers agreement. So we're working through that as best we can. We did come away all agreeing that the ROP board, that it's a critical component to education and career technology, and where the direction of public education is going. There were two Skills USA contests. One was last Saturday at Paso, where we competed in the computer and automotive, and there was one Friday, Jim? I'm sorry.
There was one Friday at Morro Bay.
Friday at Morro Bay, and it was on the computers and the give me a help here.
It was
I didn't go Friday.
The visual arts, computers, photography, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and so I don't have results yet. I apologize. Again, I just want to stress there are four new online classes that are coming in the fall. We already have one. And what this does is it allows people, students from Shandon and San Luis Coastal and all over the county, to take classes that they may not have access to. And it really evens out the playing field for what's going on in ROP. The ROP classes are sometimes an entryway into... You got the results? Okay. We're passing iPads around. It's an entryway to jobs coming out of high school, but it's also an entryway into university and colleges, because most of the ROP classes that we offer in San Luis Coastal meet the requirements for graduation requirements for both CSU and USC. So that's really good. I guess we just got this late-breaking information. I can give you some of the winners here. In computer programming, in the gold was Alec Griffin, Chris Peterson, and Austin Wright. All received gold. Computer maintenance technology were Joan Ara in gold and Prince Sin. And mobile robotics was Connor Deacon and Matthew Stewart. Medical terminology was Sean Gu. Internet working, that's beyond even my capabilities. Ian Morse, drafting, Jeremy Rands, Tara Medetovich, welding was Dale Solomon, Daniel Torson, Joe Grant, Joey Aguilar, Josh Miller, and Anna Mullen. And in automotive, we got golds with Hunter Tarsif, Zoltan Shapiro, and Frank Radish, and silver with Max Holkett. So we cleaned up, as we do often. And that's my report. So on a high note.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We'll move on to superintendent's updates. Mr. Miller isn't here to talk about the state budget. Dr. Prater, you're going to give us the continuing saga.
Yeah, you know, I was at the superintendent's annual symposium in Monterey a couple weeks ago, and I spent the majority of the week really examining and participating in budget workshops with the likes of Kevin Gordon from School Innovations and Ron Bennett from School Services, and as well as a number of superintendents who have been at this a long time. So I was picking their brains and getting a sense of where we were in California, both politically and also how that might impact the budget. So of particular note, and what I want to share with you tonight, is what is going on with the governor's initiative, ballot initiative, and why is there there's the potential for a whole lot of initiatives to fly out onto the ballot, which governor's ballot initiative, and what's of particular interest to me is that the governor is speaking about the student weighted average or weighted student formula. That weighted student formula, and why I'm paying particular attention to that, is that that will impact a number of districts in California, including basic aid districts or community funded districts like ours. And so the intention originally of the weighted student formula is a powerful one, and that is the assumption is a no harm clause. The original assumption the governor went into this with was no district will be harmed, but those districts with higher rates of poverty and English language learner status would receive additional revenue in addition to the base amount. So it's got great possibilities. It really does have strong structural content. However, the problem is that, as Ron Bennett said, that weighted student formula typically works when there's money. When there's no money, what gets removed is the no harm clause. So you have to take and extrapolate that. Ron Bennett was speaking to us at a Schools for Sound Finance workshop, and his concern over the weighted student formula is that the no harm clause has been removed, and the districts that will be harmed by this are typically those large suburban districts with low poverty rates and a more homogeneous middle class student population. And so they will receive less revenue than those districts with higher minority or poverty rates and English language learner rates. Given that, in basic aid or community-funded school districts, what happens is the weighted student formula folds all the categorical dollars, except for special education funding, into the revenue limit. What that means to us is that we effectively might lose, over time, our entire categorical programs. That doesn't mean we lose local property revenue, which is actually kind of a nice deal. But $5 to $7 million on an annualized basis is a significant event for us. That would also eventually likely include, because things are still uncertain, class size reduction monies. So this is a significant event, and I just want to keep you apprised of what's going on. And one of the things that Ron Bennett said over and over again is don't jump to conclusions. There's still quite a lot of detail to be ironed out. This could take, quite frankly, years to figure out. And I think with the plan, of course, is that the governor's ballot initiative is hoping to stabilize. The hope is to stabilize the cuts from public education, so it's not to necessarily provide additional revenue. And so we're looking at it. There are some definite pros to it, but in our case, I'm looking at it with many questions. And so the PTA, as I said, has come out with its emerging ballot initiative that looks promising. And I think at this point, the state is still very much in limbo because they don't know what their revenues will look like as we go into the May revision. And so I look forward to, and I want to raise this to the board, bringing as many of you who would like to attend with me to Sacramento to the spring Schools for Sound Finance annual conference in Sacramento. Last year I went by myself, and there were a number of districts who brought their entire board. And I thought, what I thought at the time was that was a wonderful opportunity to hear from the Sacramento legislators. They come and speak to you. Senator Simidian comes and speaks to us. And I think it's a great opportunity for you to come and hear it. And so they were encouraging the superintendents of community-funded school districts to attend that spring symposium. So I will have more information to you as we move along. But that's my report on the budget.
Dr. Prater,
yes.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
I was unclear as you were speaking on the no harm clause. was Ron Bennett's concern that it may be dropped, or as the initiative is currently worded, has it been dropped?
Correct. As the initiative is currently worded, it has been dropped.
It has been dropped. Thank you.
And the manifestation of that was basically a truancy ordinance, which they took to the county Board of Supervisors, and the County Board of Supervisors basically tabled the conversation, and they asked that they go out and work with groups that spoke out during the public hearing portion and work with those groups of parents to re-propose something potentially in the spring. There is currently a team of four people, Ian Parkinson, Dr. Crocker, Jim Salio, and DJ Pittenger from Atascadero Unified School District, and they're working on putting together a plan to basically give law enforcement a tool to directly sanction habitually truant youth. Right now they are working with members of the community that spoke out and different parent groups that spoke out during that public hearing portion, and they're reformulating a plan with those groups' inputs. They'll be in touch with myself and probably the board very soon within the next couple months to notify the board of their progress.
Chris, could you tell us a little bit, if you know, about what parent groups were speaking on? I know there were some homeschool.
There's a lot of homeschool parents, primarily independence parents with children in independent study programs and homeschooling, primarily.
Okay. You know, I was a police officer in a different millennium, and
really?
You know, we had the same issue, and you know, you have a right to, a police officer has a right to stop a person on reasonable suspicion. And I mean, I was a little surprised that they tabled it and didn't take further action on it, because law enforcement officers need the tool. There's got to be some way around that. Check with the school, have homeschooled students have an ID card, and I know that has, you know, implications, but I just think this is a necessary tool, and I hope we can figure out how to implement it.
I would agree. I mean, this county has a very high graduation percentage, but the bottom line is that we still need to advocate for the students that don't graduate, and being able to bring them, have some sort of other way of reaching them, because right now the only legal tools we have are to sanction families, parents. And for secondary students, that just doesn't always work, especially, you know, secondary kids that are out of the control of their parent.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much,
thank
Chris.
You.
Mr. Robinette, open enrollment protocols.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to just share with the board, so I'm getting a little off agenda here. I just wanted to let you know I had the great opportunity last night to attend the State Teacher of the Year dinner in Sacramento, and our own Elaine Rosenfield, second grade teacher at Bishop's Peak, was honored, and it was really a wonderful event. I mean, she was one of 12 finalists for the State Teacher of the Year. They choose five, and she was not one of the top five, which I consider arbitrary and capricious, but anyway, it was a wonderful evening and inspiring. We got to hear speeches from the all of the five finalists, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house after a couple of them because of just the dedication and the work they did. So Elaine was able to be up there with her husband Stan and a couple of friends. Dan Block, the principal of Bishop's Peak, and myself went up, and Nancy Howland, a former teacher in our school district, joined us. So she was well represented, and it was a wonderful evening. Okay, on the subject of open enrollment, at our last meeting, I shared some general comments about our district's enrollment, and tonight I'd like to share some more specific details about our plans for next year. Open enrollment, as you know, is the process whereby a parent can choose to have their child attend a school within our district, but outside of the school's neighborhood attendance boundary. This is sometimes known as intra-district transfers. This has long been a district value and one we obviously recommend keeping. It's part of our board policy. We have realized that we have needed to make staffing decisions over the years, sometimes at the 11th hour, meaning summer or days before school starts, because of our liberal interpretation of open enrollment. That is, there are situations other than at our magnet schools, Pacheco and Teach, we have changed staffing allocations based on parent choice that have impacted families that have actually moved into the area in the summer or are registering their children for kindergarten. The last thing we want to do is tell a neighborhood family who may live across the street from the school that there is no room at their neighborhood school because we have allowed too many people from outside the attendance area of that school. So consequently, we don't do that. We add a teacher, we create combination classes, we increase class size to accommodate the need, and it is a consequence that we don't necessarily have to do. Another unintended consequence is, and something we're seeing, is the shrinking and growing of certain schools because of open enrollment. And so we're kind of giving ourselves that latitude with kindergarten to just delay the notifications for open enrollments until we're pretty sure we've kind of covered our neighborhood schools. We know we will need to continue to have a lottery for Pacheco enrollment, and we will schedule this in late April, as we always do. This year, we may actually need to do a lottery for Teach Elementary as well. Both Bishop's Peak and Teach have had increasing enrollment every year, and sharing the same campus is having impacts on school size and capacity. And so if necessary, we would do that lottery in late April. If the enrollment stays the way it currently was for Teach, we'd be fine and would have no need for a lottery, just kind of giving ourselves that leverage if it's necessary. We will continue honoring the concept of new school of residence, meaning that once someone openly enrolls into a school, that becomes their school of residence. We're not intending on transferring people into and out of a school. We will also continue to honor sibling priority in open enrollment so that families are not splitting their children up. We anticipate honoring transportation to all of our schools also, as long as transportation funding holds out. And we do not anticipate the need to change anything at the secondary level. our middle schools and high schools are not impacted by our open enrollment policy. It's not a size issue at those schools. So I'm fully expectant that in most circumstances, families will maintain their ability to attend their school of choice. However, as we consider lean times, it is important to exert the influence over those things we do control. And the unnecessary additions or transfers of teachers, the creation of unnecessary combination classes, and class size impacts or outcomes we want to have better control over. If I can put up, I'll just kind of put up what our proposed or what our plan is as far as protocols, how easy that is to read. Grab some water here. So, open enrollment will take place the same time period it always has, basically the month of March. The second point is that we will consider staffing on the basis of our projections, and students will not be enrolled in a school of choice if it necessitates adding or subtracting projected staff. Parents will be notified by May 4th. We don't want to keep people in the dark, you know, through summer, except we're giving ourselves point number four, point number five. We'll give ourselves up to the middle of summer if we really need to with kindergarten. I don't anticipate, because our schools do a really good job of kind of canvassing and getting kindergarten enrollments. If open enrollment is denied, the students will be placed on a waiting list. Point number six and seven will hold lotteries if necessary. The Teach thing is questionable whether that would be necessary for Pacheco. We will definitely need a lottery. We always do. And we'll make sure we give siblings priority. Any questions about kind of what we're planning on doing with open enrollment this year?
Good, Walt.
Rick, you went through the administrative regulations there. Where does the issue of split classroom fit in there? Because, well, the reason I'm asking is I've not been a split classroom fan, and my youngest son was in a split classroom at C.L. Smith, which the person I worried about most was Roy Aguirre. Where do we fit that in the calculus of whether or not to allow an intra-district transfer?
Well, when we give staffing projections to our principals based on whatever our class size is, there is sometimes very little control we can do over combination classes. When the principals get their numbers, and we're talking elementary school, when the principals get their numbers, sometimes it's just the numbers don't pan out, whether they need to do a 1-2 combination or 4-5 combination. But what we found with some of our open enrollment issues is that if we let students come in and out kind of freely in the month of March without kind of paying attention to where they are, it actually has the potential of creating more of that. So, I think the idea is to just collect all that information in March, and instead of just openly granting everything, which has been our practice, if you want to go somewhere, we just grant it, is really kind of looking at those impacts and seeing, will this create another combination class? Will this be okay to grant? And we'll be working with our principals to kind of make those determinations.
Okay, so if I'm understanding your answer right, while open enrollment may have an impact on split classes and stuff, it's just one of, and perhaps not even the most potent factor involved.
No, I wouldn't say so. And it's inevitable that we end up with combinations here and there, unfortunately.
Sounds like an interesting year coming up.
Sure.
And I think it's good that we have waiting lists and people are moving around within the district to the schools that they like. One of the questions,
and also provided a bus there if necessary.
I just have a question, Rick. So in our schools that are shrinking, do we maintain the same class size ratio to teacher at those schools, or does the class size shrink along with the school?
It sometimes shrinks along with the school. What happens is, and it's a very difficult thing to do, is school will start, we'll monitor enrollment for 10 days, and then we have to make a decision, are we going to actually pull a teacher from this school and move them to another school? And in the last couple of years, or several years, we haven't. We've made the decision, students are used to their teacher, I know it's smaller, I know there's only 16 kids in this kindergarten class instead of 20 or 22 or 25 over in this other school, but it's really hard to take a teacher and say, we're transferring you because we need you over here. Now, we've done that in the past, but it hasn't been our practice recently. And I would argue that largely because of our open enrollment, we have had situations of smaller classes at some schools.
So for parents for whom class size is important, they might want to look at some of our shrinking schools as an opportunity for an intra-district transfer.
Well, yes, because I don't think we'd have any problems granting those. However, our whole intent of this is to actually better control overall what's happening in our school populations and the growth. I think this is really just trying to follow our policy and our administrative regulations. It might not have any effect. We may see that we're able to just continue to grant everything, anything and everything, but I think our past practice has been just to do that, to just get them all in, grant them, do a Pacheco lottery, and move on. And, if you look at the population of Baywood Elementary and Monarch Grove Elementary, two schools that are, fairly close together in the same community, Baywood is growing, every year. Monarch Grove is shrinking every year. Most of that is due to boundaries, and we may need to look at reboundering at some point. But there is a factor of open enrollment that plays into that also, and that's one of the things we want to be able to at least look at and not affect any family that's already at a school, but especially with new kindergartners, new families, new open enrollment requests, scrutinize it a little more.
Hmm. Mr. Buckman kind of opened up my question, and you may have answered my question, but I know that funding for transportation either is now non-existent or we expect that it will become non-existent in the state budget. So I had written down the number of students that are bused due to open enrollment. Now, you said that you thought Denise would say since we're already doing these routes.
I think she would say that because the routes are there, we have to send buses. The number is a whole different thing. How many we bus, I'd have to get that information for you.
But there aren't routes that are open only to accommodate transfer students.
I don't know that for certain.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Kim.
Mrs. Holmes? I believe that there is a bus from the coast specifically designed to serve transfers into San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. But we do not bus directly to between one campus and every other campus.
Oh, that's
we have
a really good point.
Hubs at Laguna. So if you live, if you're trying to transfer across town, you don't get to ride a bus directly to your school. You have to ride that neighborhood bus that would take you to your neighborhood school and go to Laguna to catch the bus that goes to the other school you're trying to get to. So it's
that's a very good point. Our two hubs are Los Osos Middle School and Laguna Middle School. And Laguna Middle School is by far our largest hub. So there are students who transfer into there, get another bus to go out to a school. That same thing occurs at Los Osos Middle School. So those are kind of the two transportation hubs where students might get off and on a bus that then goes to whatever location they're supposed to.
Okay.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
If I may, Chris. And you may not have the information, Rick. We could just get it. I'm just curious where we are with encroachment in the general fund and transportation. I know we've addressed it to some extent with fee for transportation.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think our share of state funding is somewhere around $600,000, if I'm not mistaken, of funding from the state for home-to-school transportation. We collect fees of basically a dollar a day for families that are above the free and reduced lunch threshold that want to ride the bus. But I know there's encroachment, even with the collection of fees and with the state funding, that we spend more than that. But I don't know to what percent we do or what
maybe
extent.
Maybe just an email update on that. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you
very much. So moving on to another topic. And so we're trying to get a kind of an interesting, eclectic group of people together to just think about our future in terms of accelerated and specialized learning opportunities. So tomorrow afternoon, we will meet for an initial meeting to explore the following objectives. I think it's the next one there I just wanted to put up there, which is to further cultivate the bilingual and cultural abilities of students who participate in the district's two-way immersion program. That was one of the pieces of Initiative 6. And then to also explore the development of magnet schools or programs to provide opportunities for students to specialize in focus fields of inquiry and learning. Dr. Delkasamp and myself will co-chair this group, and we'll likely be sending out smaller committees over the course of the spring and into next year to explore opportunities in campuses and looking at pilots we can try in our middle schools, perhaps our high schools, to attempt to create learning communities in a number of areas. They may include bilingual, global studies, the whole STEM initiative, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, fine arts, digital project learning, accelerated learning. Who knows? So we anticipate studying some possibilities, collecting some data, and then likely spending the next school year, meaning next year, to plan some magnet programs within our district that we can pilot for the future. So we'll really look forward to sharing with the board how this progresses, and it's a should be a very exciting day tomorrow to kind of get started and say, let's just start thinking outside of the box and seeing what we come up with.
Questions from board members. Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a comment. I got a call from Jack Beardwood, who does the local newspaper.
And
he was asking about transportation and how that was working out. And I said the state had decided to not cut transportation funds. Is that correct?
Not yet.
And then I had a question about closing schools, and I said that hadn't even been discussed. And then, but he did was interested in this magnet school idea. So, you know, I just told him that we, in very generally, had talked about it. So, maybe
keep Jack apprised.
Keep him apprised. He might be very interested in this.
Yeah, he does good stories. Okay,
Dr. Prater.
I know Rick Robinette is very excited to facilitate this endeavor, but I want to forewarn the board that these types of committees can grow legs really fast, and ideas will grow quickly beyond the ability of me to keep you in the loop. And sometimes I won't even necessarily fully understand what has been said in the local cafe. So I'm excited for where this is going to go, but just be patient with us in terms of, well, I'll try my best to keep you in the loop as these things and great ideas emerge. But as all of you know, it has to come through you, ultimately, and the board. And what will come with that is a full analysis of cost, impact across the whole continuum. So we're trying to do this while the state is still uncertain in its in the financial sense. So we're walking into this optimistically but cautiously. Okay?
Great.
If,
thank you.
If I could just...
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Moore.
Well, one of the issues that could be considered would be restructuring the middle school to add sixth grade. So I noticed the Tascadero has embarked on that highly fraught road. That's why I wanted to ask you that.
That's what I'd love to see. But
I thought it worked
we'll
really
let
well
let this group go.
Ago, so.
Great. Seeing no other questions, we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to have something pulled. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Approval of proposed salary increases for positions exempt from merit system not represented by bargaining unit and substitute teachers. Acceptance of donations. Disposition of surplus property. Approval of furniture and equipment requests. Approval of purchase orders. Approval of warrants and payroll. Approval of California High School exit exam CASI waivers for students with disabilities. And approval of contract with Emerald Data Solutions Incorporated to implement the board docs paperless agenda system. Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on these items? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I would move acceptance of items 1 through 9 on the action consent agenda.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? It's been moved by Mrs. Sheffer, seconded by Mr. Millar. Is there any further board discussion on that? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0.
My question is to inspire you to agendize it.
Right. And so, yeah, so we'll be meeting again next week or next time on the 21st on this item. Okay? Great. Thank you.
And I'd like,
yes, Mr. Millar,
if we could, prior to that discussion, if we could flesh out a little bit what this means.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. Let's move on to item number 12, reports by board members. I'm assuming there's no other advanced agenda items. I didn't see anything. Okay. Reports by board members. Mrs. Roger.
I'm going first, and I just have one thing to report, that I was able to attend the screening of American Teacher, which we all were made aware of and were encouraged to attend by Dr. Crocker, Dr. Prater, and Bruce Berdurian from SLCTA. And it was very thought-provoking and well done, I thought. So I was glad that I took the time to do that. Teachers certainly do a beyond a yeoman's job, and that was well represented in that film. So, thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I also got to see that. It was so packed that it was absolutely packed. You could not find a parking space downtown, and the entire theater was full. And it would be useful to show that. I think around it really does show us what the life of the teacher is like. And speaking of that, I wanted to acknowledge the teacher coach and the attorney coaches for the Laguna Middle School mock trial team, because like our Walt Millar here, they put in so many hours working with these students from September until February, and then now it's been extended for the Laguna Middle School, which is a program you guys, I'm sure, will recall that a few years ago when we started an after-school program push at the schools, this is one of the programs they started at Laguna Middle School, and in the first outing last year, they made it to the finals, and again this year, they're making it to the finals. And they have the same coaching staff, with one addition. The coaching staff is Mr. Benitez at Laguna Middle School, teaches Spanish and history there. Mike Burrell, who has been around for a very long time, a former teacher who is now a coach. And two lawyer coaches, Mike Holtzman
And a new addition, which is a young woman who herself was in mock trial in high school and in college, and her name is Tegan Thibodeau. And I just want to acknowledge their efforts and thank them, and also thank Laguna Middle School for following through on that program and making it such a success.
Jim, and then Walter, and then Mark.
Well, I just want to mention that I attended the Sam Boyd California Invitational Wrestling Tournament on January 20th and 21st. More than 50 schools were there. It was a very successful tournament due to the hard work of the staff, both paid and volunteer. I want to commend Coach John Andre, Coach Joel Martinez, a wrestling coach, his assistant coaches, wrestlers, the parent volunteers, Annette Bunnell, Becky Henry, and her custodial staff, Peggy Flynn, Donnie Domagini, Bob Heron, Bob Schwanoa, Sandy Pry, Matt Gaughan, and the site administration. They all did a superb job of running an efficient, safe, and fun tournament. I'm going to skip the American Teacher. I think that was covered quite well and saw a lot of young, aspiring teachers and a lot of veteran teachers there, too, as well, many of them from our district. On the 3rd, I got to attend Skills USA at Morro Bay, visited Liz Moore's classroom where they were holding a competition. Most of the competitors were out already taking their photos, and they were going. But she took me around on a tour, and she showed me student work and explained the various course offerings, both ROP and regular, and got a chance to look at the video studio where the students film the bulletin or the announcements and do their own projects. I also had a chance to talk briefly with Donald Pucci, who was taking a group to Salinas for a competition. The Parent Project is conducting two parenting classes in Spanish, one for the parents of elementary children, and that's at Monarch Grove, and the other one is for parents of adolescents at Laguna Middle School. Linda Questenberry and Jackie Garza are the instructors, and they have received generous support and help from the EL teachers and aides, administrators, and custodial staff at both sites. And I want to recognize Evelyn Frame, Kathy Ahern, Sue King, Diane Frost, Annie Marinello, Andrea Blanco, Rowena Padilla, Hartshorn, Francis Hallwood, and William Johnson, and Jim Skoulis for their help with these classes. They've been very helpful, very accommodating. And finally, I want to thank Jim Skoulis, the principal at Monarch Grove, for allowing me to observe the transitional kindergarten class, the school garden, and the proposed site for the state preschool. So thanks to all those folks.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that Pacific Beach competed. There was, and it was Aaron, and I'm drawing a blank on Aaron's last name. I will try to do better at the next meeting, but... thank you. And he was an individual. And then Randy. Do you have Randy's last name? Yeah.
No, Aaron's name is sitting over there on the name tag.
Oh, that's right. Oh, good. I was hoping he would be here. He and Randy, whose last name, you work with him every day with first name. So, but they were both singled out for individual awards. And Aaron has a voice that is amazing, and he did such a superb job with presentations, and I think he was wearing the Walt Millar Memorial jacket.
Hopefully not Memorial.
Not Memorial. Honorary jacket. So, but thank you very much for allowing me to report on it. They did a lot of work, and they deserve some recognition.
Great. Well,
Mark, thank you very much. I'm still kind of... adrenaline up. And the Board of Supervisors has presented the countywide PTA with a resolution for its work. Last year, the countywide PTAs, all the 36 units, donated over $1 million to the public education system. And I really want to thank Dr. Prater for being there this morning to speak on the behalf of the PTAs that he's been involved with. I will be attending Career Day at Los Osos Middle School this week, which is fine, except I have to be there at 7:30, and that follows a day when I have to be at Los Osos Middle School at 7:30 to be at the Estero Bay Youth Coalition meeting. I'm not sure I can get up 2 days in a row at 7:30, but I'm going to try. One of the more exciting things is Star Bay Youth Coalition was basically going to go away. The funding from the county and Friday Night Live had dried up, and the newest PTA in the county and in our district is Los Osos Middle School PTA, and they have taken the Estero Bay Youth Coalition and made it a subcommittee of the PTA, so the Estero Bay Youth Coalition will continue. It's a group that's basically the students run, and there's a couple of us that attend and go, oh my God, they're brilliant. And as adults, we stay there. So lots of good things going on in the district, and I thank everybody.
I want to acknowledge for the mock trial team, too, both Dr. Prater's support and also the faculty at PB every year are really great. And I want to thank that anonymous donor out there who is paying for a pizza party for the team. I have some suspicions on who he is, or she is, but thank you.
And I'll just close with I had an opportunity last night to meet with, I think it was every school board president from in San Luis Obispo County, except for Lucia Mar. We miss them. The executive secretaries and a lot of the superintendents, and we had a really robust discussion on what the role of the board president was. I was able to speak about that, talked about how you set an agenda. We had some, like I said, some really good conversations, and it was nice to see all the board presidents together. And It's a challenging thing, and I think there was a lot of acknowledgement among the people how difficult it can be, and that's especially for our smaller districts who have never done anything like this before, to really get some advice from people that have done it. It was a great meeting. And then I want to say that, as everybody knows, one of our longtime teachers, the president of SLCTA, is up in San Francisco right now. He had some surgery today, some pretty serious surgery. And I think if we could just take a moment and send some good wishes up his way, he'd probably appreciate it. So why don't we just take a minute and send some good thoughts up to Bruce, and then we'll adjourn the meeting. So thank you, and we'll see you the 21st in Los Osos.